welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. So glad you can join us again this week. I am your host, Arthur Arkish, and excited to bring you a segment we taped recently regarding all 32 NFL quarterback rooms and kind of where things stand as the offseason amps up and competitions start to commence. So, as usual, please check us out each week on Blog Talk Radio and subscribe to us on iTunes. We greatly appreciate that. You can also follow all of us on Twitter. I am at Arthur Arkish, Hub Arkish at Hub underscore Arkish, Nate Atkins at Nate Atkins CF, and Kevin Fishbane at Kevin Fishbane. So easy to find us on Twitter, and we hope you will do that because we're sharing all kinds of stuff there as well, is, you know, in all the different formats at Pro Football Weekly. So, as I mentioned, we are going all across the league and looking at the quarterback rooms, and it seems natural to start in the AFC East. We typically go coast to coast, and there's some interesting goings on, obviously, with the Patriots, where Tom Brady is, of course, in jeopardy of missing his first start in many, many years because of the looming Deflategate suspension. And that's kind of where we're going to start today. Where do things stand with Tom Brady and this impending suspension?
Kevin Fishbane, who focuses on the AFC East for us, and it certainly is interesting that they drafted Jacoby Brissett out of North Carolina State as high as they did. We heard they love Jimmy Garoppolo, that they were ready to go with him last year when they thought they had to. Is the Brissett draft pick a knock on Garoppolo, or is it just typical Bill Belichick, New England Patriot MO?
I think it's more the latter. I think this is the Patriots. You know, they've drafted quarterbacks before. We've seen Ryan Mallett as one. I mean, they've done this for years, and for them, they need a backup quarterback for those first 4 weeks. There's nobody else on the roster, so they can get Jacoby Brissett, who, at the bare minimum, if Garoppolo is your starter, they have a backup for the first 4 weeks. And then who knows? Maybe down the line, look, Brady's not going to play forever, and if Garoppolo takes over, then what's Brissett going to do? Are they going to pay Garoppolo when it's time for his next contract? What if they can't afford him, like a Brock Osweiler situation? You got to have somebody else ready in Jacoby Brissett. So it makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons for the Patriots to make this move. And you know, I think some people had Brissett in that draft range, and then when the Patriots do it, everyone's like, oh, that makes some sense there. But I think this is certainly more about Brissett than an indictment on what Garoppolo can do.
No question about what's going on in Miami. Ryan Tannehill, that's why Adam Gase was brought there. Maybe a little bit about the backup situation, Kevin, and is there any clarity on Buffalo, where, you know, wonderful year for Tyrod Taylor, but clearly not etched in stone as the quarterback of the future?
No, he's going to really have to prove himself again this year. You know, he is helped by a very good running game. He made some huge plays last year. He's got to be more consistent. EJ Manuel is not going to be the answer, but Cardale Jones is such an intriguing talent there with a rocket arm that we saw what he was able to do a couple of years ago. Obviously, last year was not a good year for him in Columbus, but he is right there, and I would imagine he'll be the number two over EJ Manuel at some point. And if Tyrod Taylor does not, you know, re-sign with Buffalo, maybe they go in that direction. But I think in an ideal world for the Bills, Tyrod lights it up again. They can give him the contract and feel comfortable about quarterback.
Arthur, what happens in Miami to Adam Gase? I mean, he's going to get a couple of years, but if he can't work, not miracles, but at least turn Ryan Tannehill into an NFL quarterback, that whole plan is down the drain.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But I think we have to point out, and Ryan Tannehill right now is just average, and he already got the huge deal, so I think that's where some of the scrutiny comes from. But it's only fair to point out that prior to this past season, he had made nice strides in each of his first 3 years, and it was after getting the money where things kind of went downhill. So obviously that is concerning, but you have to think Adam Gase. There's so many similarities between Tannehill and Cutler just in terms of the raw tools, and I think we all think highly of Gase here, having watched him closely for a year, and he's probably going to get the best out of Tannehill.
Unlike the Patriots, the picture of quarterback stability over the years, the other AFC East clubs a little dicier. The Bills, of course, are coming off a really nice season from Tyrod Taylor, but seem prepared to let him go into a contract year, which should tell you all you need to know. Well, they want to see more, frankly, to decide whether Tyrod Taylor is a franchise quarterback. So it's a big year coming for him and, of course, Rex Ryan's Bills. And then there's the Jets. I don't know if there's an uglier quarterback situation in the NFL right now. Did Mike McCannon panic a little bit with the second-round pick on Christian Hackenberg? Is someone going to win this staring contest between McCannon and Ryan Fitzpatrick? We don't know, but one thing we felt confident saying is that Geno Smith is probably not going to take the Jets to the playoffs this year, so we'll be interesting to see how that situation is resolved as well. We move now to the AFC North quarterback situation, where there are three fairly situated battles, or lack thereof, if you will. Obviously, Ben Roethlisberger and Andy Dalton and and Joe Flacco, of course, entrenched, though he is coming off the ACL tear. And then one, stop us if you've heard this before, the Browns have some questions at quarterback, and we thought we'd bring in our resident Browns expert to see what Hugh Jackson has in mind.
Yeah, and Nate Atkins, of course, our associate editor, has specialized for us in the AFC North and also happens to be a hometown kid when it comes to Cleveland Browns. And I know it's been a long, cold walk, but I personally think that RG3 was the best quarterback move by any team made this offseason with all the controversy surrounding this draft and some of these guys who are unsigned.
Certainly, when you look at the quarterbacks coming into this draft and how, like we've talked over and over again, they're not worth mortgaging your draft for. And so to take a flyer on a guy with the kind of talent of Robert Griffin III, the big arm, the mobility, the way he might fit in Hugh Jackson's sort of vertical offense, along with the running game that he's trying to establish, they might as well, for how long their famous jersey is of quarterbacks who failed, they might as well take a flyer like that. And if it doesn't work, maybe go after Deshaun Watson in the draft next year.
And then Cody Kessler, that's the one that had everybody talking.
Yeah, it did. I mean, that's an analytics pick all the way, where they just see him as a developmental backup that they don't want to get too good and leave and go sign with someone else. And so they're going to just kind of fit him in that A.J. McCarron role that Hugh Jackson had in Cincinnati.
And we know Pittsburgh in great shape if Big Ben can stay healthy. They've got Bruce Gronkowski back now, which is also much better for them in the backup situation. We know it's going to be Joe Flacco in Baltimore, assuming that knee is fine. We assume that Jimmy Clausen will hang on to that backup position. Maybe it's Ryan Mallett. And then you take a look at Cincinnati Bengals. I thought A.J. McCarron proved he could play, and Andy Dalton's going to be the guy. I got to tell you, if Dalton struggles at all, or they get down to playoff time, he's not playing all that well, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some chatter around that position that maybe McCarron should get some more snaps.
Yeah, in hindsight of the painful loss the Bengals had in the playoffs to the Steelers, maybe the one bright side was it didn't happen with Andy Dalton as the starting quarterback, because it would have really freaked people out after the way McCarron stepped in at the end of last year and played so well. And you're right, if it happens again and again, Andy Dalton has a pretty good regular season but doesn't deliver in the playoffs, they're going to start to think about, what do we move on to this other guy and see what he has.
You know, Kevin, Dalton is probably a nice guy. He definitely had his best year in the NFL last year prior to the thumb injury. And yet the way he reacted with that whole Red River rifle, Red River BB, I can't even remember exactly what the whole thing was, but he kind of put himself in a bad light on national TV.
Yeah, and Hub, as a fellow ginger, I got to tell you, we got to have thick skin. Andy Dalton did not give us a good look with that attitude. You just got to let it roll off the back there and just keep going. And we've been proud of Andy Dalton, us redheads, and now Carson Wentz comes in, and he's going to give Andy Dalton the challenge, and I bet you Wentz would not respond the way Dalton did.
Arthur, real quick, can we assume that Ben Roethlisberger can stay healthy the way he plays the game? Because if he does, he may be the equal of a Brady or certainly a Cam Newton.
Yeah, I agree with you on the talent and what he's shown when he's been on the field, but he just lost his left tackle in Kelvin Beachum. They've got other issues there. You know, he's lost his deep threat in Martavis Bryant, so I don't think that's a safe assumption to make, but when he's on the field, he is as mighty as anyone right now.
Remember this name, folks, Sammy Coates. The Steelers keep finding him. They're hoping that Coates is the next Martavis Bryant. Actually, of the various divisions, the AFC North in better shape than most at the quarterback position, even with whatever the Cleveland Browns are trying to figure out.
Next, we head to the AFC South, which for my money is the most improved division in the National Football League, and it's amazing for a division that was so down last year, just how the arrow appears to be pointing straight up, at least at the quarterback position. And we have to start with one of the offseason's biggest investments, of course, in general manager Rick Smith's poaching of Brock Osweiler from the Denver Broncos.
Boy, you talk about winning the lottery. Kid started 7 games, didn't play a complete game in any of them, and got a $72 million contract out of it. He was going to be the starter and the heir apparent to Peyton Manning in Denver, but he got $7 million more guaranteed dollars from the Houston Texans. And Bill O'Brien, a little bit of a quarterback whisperer reputation around the league, and it's interesting that he was the guy that was willing to make that commitment along with GM Rick Smith by the Texans.
That's right. So the Texans gave Osweiler, I believe, a little over $5 million per NFL start, so that's not a bad gig if you can get it. But, you know, he showed decently well. He played really well here at Soldier Field in his first start ahead of Peyton Manning, but it was kind of up and down the rest of the way, and maybe that's what you would expect. Now, the good news for the Texans is they have kind of a similar makeup, a really good defense that they they rode to the playoffs last year, so they're going to try and approach it similarly to what the Broncos did with Osweiler last year. And the Texans have a really good supporting cast that they've obviously spent all offseason improving with Lamar Miller and new DeAndre Hopkins sidekicks and Will Fuller and Braxton Miller. So it's all in front of Brock Osweiler, but I think pretending that this is not still a bit of a big unknown and a bit of a risk by the Texans, it would be kind of foolish.
You know, and I'm drawing a blank here as far as that depth chart. I know Mallett is gone. Brian Hoyer is in Chicago now. What do they do behind him?
Yeah, they re-signed Brandon Whedon, who actually played pretty well down the stretch for them after coming in late. So he got a new deal. They still have Tom Savage, who they drafted in the fourth round out of Pittsburgh a couple years ago. But Whedon's definitely going to be the number two there again, because he spurred them to a win or two after coming in on short notice last year.
Jeez, Kev, Jerry Jones must be jealous. He said Brandon Whedon throws the prettiest ball in the NFL.
He did, and he probably still thinks Tony Romo's going to bring them a Super Bowl, which he might. But, yeah, at least Whedon's staying in Texas, so he can stay close to his biggest fan.
We will get to the Cowboys in a little while. Let's stay in the AFC South, Arthur. And Marcus Mariota is the quarterback in Tennessee. He got banged up last year. He took a beating. They went out and focused on the offensive line to support him. They focused on the running game to support him. He adapted really well, really quickly, outplaying Jameis Winston in the opener and throwing 6 touchdown passes. But at the end of the day, he's still a college spread quarterback who we need to see a lot more of before we know if he's going to be the future with the Titans.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he showed an ability to win from the pocket, which was the biggest question going into last season. So that was a huge step in the right direction. Started to shake kind of the gimmick quarterback label. But like you said, there's a lot of work to be done. And he's another guy who's been set up extremely well. I think the offensive line is still going to be a growing process, even with all the new additions. But when you have DeMarco Murray in the backfield, Derrick Henry in the backfield, it's going to be a lot easier on Marcus Mariota. First and foremost, he's got to stay healthy. He was knocked out of multiple games with injuries to both knees last year. So it's all about that line. And then, of course, the interim head coach who was hired full-time there, and Mike Mularkey, it wasn't exactly the flashiest decision, nor was bringing in Matt Cassel to back up Zach Mettenberger. But at least in terms of Mariota, the arrow is clearly pointing up.
You know, Nate, I actually have always liked Mettenberger coming out of LSU. He didn't fare particularly well in the couple chances he got in Tennessee. I still think he might have a future. But the other issue with the Titans, yeah, they've invested heavily in the ground game and the running game, but tight end Delanie Walker caught over 90 passes last year. They didn't have a wide receiver that caught more than 36.
Yeah, they have Dorial Green-Beckham, who averaged 17 yards a catch in his brief opportunities, but that's a guy who still has to learn a lot as far as route running and as far as his hands go. And Mariota worked really well with Delanie Walker. They just locked him up to an extension, but he is getting older, and it's going to be interesting to see, as much as Mike Mularkey likes to pound it up the middle, when they're going to finally stretch the field outside. And Mariota really showed last year, if there is one weakness in his game right now, it's his deep ball.
We take a look at the Jacksonville Jaguars, and I'm saving what to me is the most interesting for last, but Blake Bortles, boy, year two, he's got to stop throwing picks. He's thrown 35 interceptions in 2 years, but he also threw 35 touchdown passes just last season, second only to Tom Brady in the NFL.
Yeah, he's a stud, big and strong and mobile and can throw it downfield for sure, and he might have the best wide receiving duo in the NFL there in Hurns and Robinson. So it's looking really good for Bortles and obviously for the Jaguars overall after clearly winning the offseason. It'll be interesting to see. You mentioned him kind of forcing the ball in some spots, and obviously he was playing from behind often, so kind of earned a reputation as a bit of a garbage time hero in his breakthrough second season. But if that defense plays like it's being paid to, they should be able to lean on the ground game a little bit more and maybe take a little bit of pressure off Bortles, and perhaps you'll see a little higher efficiency for him in year three.
And the Jags probably as stable depth-wise as anybody in the league, too. You got a solid veteran behind him, a guy who started and won, and so I think they probably feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, no doubt. They tried to bring Bortles in slowly as a rookie. Chad Henne, I think, got hurt pretty quickly or was benched for performance reasons, but they did go to Bortles early on. But like you said, not just because he's a Michigan guy. Henne does have a lot of NFL experience and he's proven he can get you through a spell, and that's really all you can ask for a backup in today's NFL.
It's hard to believe that prior to 1998, the only Michigan quarterback to ever start in the NFL was Jim Harbaugh, wasn't it? Ever since then, it's become quarterback you. How about, though, the kid from Stanford who was coached by Jim Harbaugh? What people forget, Arthur, is that prior to the injuries last year, Andrew Luck was playing awful through the first 7 games. His quarterback rating was in the 70s. There's no real explanation for that.
No, not really. And it did cost Pep Hamilton his job. Obviously, they brought in Rob Chudzinski, and he will be back for his first full year in the play-calling role. But it is kind of interesting. Luck has had his issues with interceptions, too. I think Luck is a classic example of a guy who tries to do too much. The defense hasn't been good. The offensive line has been atrocious. So he's, a lot of his best plays are of the schoolyard variety when he's doing things off script. But that's also when he puts himself in harm's way. That's how he suffered the kidney injury last year that was downfield on a scramble. So they're teaching him, you got to get down. You got to preserve your body. You're about to be the richest player in NFL history. We all fully expect that deal to get done sometime this summer. Now it's about him protecting himself and trying to kind of build. That's another, obviously, front office that has really prioritized the offensive line. So there should be some improvement blocking-wise, and he still has all kinds of weapons to get the ball to.
And we saved the most interesting situation for last in the AFC South with Andrew Luck and the Colts. Jim Irsay has promised that Luck will be the richest player in NFL history by the 4th of July. Ryan Grigson has also promised, and Irsay for that matter, that he is going to be better protected. So we'll see if the Colts, in fact, after the offseason investments in their offensive line, are able to keep Luck upright as he is getting that fresh paper. And we conclude this conference with some AFC West discussion, where, of course, the Super Bowl champions have endured quite the offseason, obviously trying to replace Peyton Manning, arguably the NFL's greatest quarterback of all time, but also, this is inarguable, was the lowest rated quarterback in the league last year. So how did John Elway go out and try and replace him? Of course, with the mistake-prone Mark Sanchez and developmental first-rounder Paxton Lynch.
I don't think it's a big secret at this point. The lowest quarterback rating in the NFL last year, Peyton Manning. If you combine Manning and Osweiler, the lowest quarterback rating for a team in the NFL, the Denver Broncos, they're both gone now. They've traded for Mark Sanchez, who's lost starting jobs in more cities than we can count. They have Trevor Siemian, who is a favorite of Kevin Fishbane's because he's a fellow Northwestern alum, but never taken a snap in the NFL. And now they've traded up for Paxton Lynch, who was a controversial draft pick at best. Your summation, if you will, of where the Bronco quarterback position is at right now. Can they do it again with bad quarterback play, I guess is what the real question is.
Well, they're going to have a little harder time because I just don't think you can expect their defense to be as dominant with Malik Jackson out of town, Danny Trevathan out of town, and they really didn't address that linebacker spot in the draft like I thought they would. So I don't think their margin for error is as good, but at the same time, I think you can expect these guys to not, if it's Paxton Lynch, he might not have the worst quarterback rating in the NFL, although it is going to be a work in progress as he learns five-step drops, seven-step drops, calling plays, taking the ball out of center. So it's going to take a little time, but they should be rolling by the time they gear up for the postseason if they're in it.
And what's really interesting here is in this division, the other three teams, Kansas City, Oakland, San Diego, they've all got questions, but there's no question about what's happening at quarterback. We started Kansas City, where I continue to believe that Alex Smith's got to be the most underrated player in the NFL. I mean, he may never be a great thrower. He is an excellent runner from the position, and all the guy does is win.
Maybe underappreciated is the better term, because I think he also is what he is. I don't think he's ever going to have the massive arm or sort of the gunslinger mentality to really put himself over the top. But at the same time, this guy is so efficient. He manages the game so well, and he offers enough with his escapability and his sort of ability to roll out and find whether it's tight ends or running backs or receivers. That I mean, he just runs that offense and that system well, and he gets better every year.
And I guess the big question there is Andy Reid's security blanket, Chase Daniel, is now in Philadelphia. So are they deep enough if he gets banged up?
It's a good question. I mean, they're going to look at either Aaron Murray or Kevin Hogan, who they just drafted. These are two quarterbacks who are super experienced and mobile at the college level. But are they ready to step in for a team that hopes to contend? I mean, it's a little dicey there.
Derek Carr is clearly the future in Oakland. They've got the fascinating fourth-round pick of Connor Cook. And then you wonder about the depth behind Carr.
Yeah, you do, but I mean, they supposedly really like Matt McGloin, and when he stepped in garbage time last year, he played incredibly well, completed more than 70% of his passes, and that's another guy with a lot of experience in college, and he's been around a few years. He started as a rookie, and so I think they're going to try and keep Connor Cook a little in the weeds a little bit longer and see maybe if he has some trade value.
Hey, Kev, real quick, Connor Cook is a lightning rod for all kinds of things. Did you see the stuff that came out about his father immediately? You talk about a lightning rod, and I had talked to one NFL scout who said, I'd be happy to have Connor Cook. I just don't want his dad anywhere around the team.
Yeah, that was stuff you don't necessarily want to put in public if that's, those are your thoughts in this day and age. But maybe explains a little bit about where, because some of the people that had a lot of questions about Connor Cook's leadership and the, his personality, maybe some of that comes from his upbringing.
Yeah, folks, we don't want to waste a lot of time on this show about it. But if you're interested, check the Twitter account of Connor Cook's dad. I'd give you the handle if I knew it. But you should be able to find it. This guy is out there, and you can see where some of the issues have come with this kid. And then finally, though, before we go, San Diego, Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers has arguably had two of his best years in the league the last couple of years. He doesn't get the help of, with healthy wide receivers, and the offensive line has been just awful.
Yeah, and the running game has been terrible, and tied with that offensive line, but also Melvin Gordon's fumbling problems taking him off the field. And so you have a guy that's just trying to do everything with the quick release and the big arm. And hopefully this year with Travis Benjamin there, with his old offensive coordinator Ken Wisenhunt back, with his tackles healthy, with what they've invested up front, you got to hope as he's getting older he has a chance to do a little bit more than he's been able to.
And real quick, he's taken such a beating the last couple of years but stayed upright. What if he does go down? What's the depth like?
Yeah, I mean, that's the question. He never goes down, but behind him right now is Kellen Clemens. That's a guy who's started in New York and St. Louis, who's been around the block a little bit. I think one of those very typical, not good enough to be a starter, but experienced enough to be a backup.
And that does it for our AFC discussion, our quarterback breakdown segment. When we get back, though, you don't want to go anywhere, because we're going to move to the NFC, where Cam Newton, Russell Wilson, a lot of young guns, and some established guys are trying to get to the mountaintop as well. That's all just ahead on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We've arrived at the NFC East, or as Hub Arkish liked to call it last year, the NFC Least. There's one thing that the Philadelphia Eagles quarterback room won't be called, though, is the least populated. Obviously, the Eagles have collected quarterbacks. They have invested $43 million at quarterback for 2016. And, Hub, how is this situation figured to shake out?
You know, I don't know that this situation is either should be or is as awkward as people suspect. Bradford's getting paid. That's the bottom line. He got the contract he wanted. His agent, Tom Condon, tried to make it sound like he was such a reputable, competitive guy that if he wasn't going to get a chance to compete and be the future, that he wanted a deal. It was all a lot of smoke. He reacted badly. He knows now that this is where he's going to play. I don't think there's any question he's going to be the starter this year unless something strange happens, unless he plays his way out of the position. And the bigger question is, did Howie Roseman and the Eagles know what they were doing when they absolutely mortgaged the present and the future to get Carson Wentz? Now, that's not fair. About 75% of the experts, being scouts, GMs, even coaches that I've talked to, thought that Carson Wentz was the better of the two prospects over Jared Goff. If you're going to make a deal like the Eagles and the Rams made, obviously you want the best guy. So they got very lucky in that regard. But Kevin, I still say you can't make that deal. There is no player in the league that is worth what these teams have given up for it. The Redskins proved it to the Rams. The Rams turn around and do the same thing, and now the Eagles have done it too.
You do it if you have found a once-in-a-generation quarterback and you are desperate for that guy to be leading your future. And I think, as good as we think Wentz might be, no one is thinking that he is that generational talent that only comes around once every few years. And the Eagles have the money committed to Sam Bradford. They made Chase Daniel the highest-paid backup quarterback in the league, though that title will go to Sam Bradford if Carson Wentz ever takes over while Bradford's still there. So it's one of those things we're going to follow for a while. But look, I will never fault the GM for making a move if they fall in love with the guy and they think he's that good. You got to go find your quarterback at some point, otherwise you're stuck. But it was just strange to see the Eagles doing it after what they'd done at the position.
And what, of course, is so fascinating about it, guys, that we can't ignore, they didn't know which one they were going to get when they made the deal. So they can't argue that we only made the deal because we found the guy and it was Carson Wentz. They were willing to take sloppy seconds, if you will. They just got lucky, as it turned out. Now, what's interesting, Arthur, is you look at the New York Giants. Here's a team that did something similar. People forget that to get Eli Manning, the New York Giants gave up the fourth pick in the 2004 draft, which turned into Phillip Rivers. They also gave up a number one the following year, which became Sean Merriman, who had a really nice career, and a 3 and a 5. So giving up a 1, a 3, and a 5 is not the price that these teams are paying these days, but it was a big deal. It worked for the Giants. And with Eli Manning, we don't have to talk too much about depth because he has currently started 180 consecutive games, the third longest streak in NFL history behind his brother and Brett Favre. Nobody's going to get to Favre, but this may be the one record of his brother's that he breaks. It would happen in 2017.
When you said people forget, that includes me. And the reason is because if you have the kind of success Eli Manning does, no one cares about what you gave up for it. So just quickly getting back to the Eagles, if Carson Wentz turns into a future Hall of Famer, no one's going to remember this bizarre offseason and all the stockpiling of quarterbacks that, of course, Howie Roseman has done. But like you said, Eli Manning has become really the game's premier Iron Man at the position. And he had a great year last year, bounced back from a rough year the year prior, has some continuity, although Tom Coughlin leaves. Obviously, Ben McAdoo stays, and Manning is getting more and more comfortable in that offense. And, you know, it should be poised for another big-time year. The one interesting thing is they didn't do anything to address their offensive line. And a lot of people felt like that maybe was a mistake. You've still got Marshall Newhouse at right tackle. That could be a problem for Eli Manning.
And Ryan Nassib with the best job in football. How'd you like to be the clipboard holder for the guy who's played 180 straight games over 10 years since Eli came off the field? So Nassib is going to make about $1 million or so to hold the clipboard again this year. You know, Nate, we look at Washington, and it's interesting. They appear to be as deep as anybody in the league with Kirk Cousins starting, coming off a Pro Bowl-type season. Colt McCoy is a proven backup who can come in and win a couple games for you. And then I thought Nate Sudfeld, who they got in Indiana, was one of the more interesting developmental prospects in this draft. But that's the way you want your board set up. You want a solid starter who has Pro Bowl potential. You want a proven veteran who can come and win games, and then you want a developmental prospect. The issue I have, though, is that Cousins hasn't done this over the long haul. Remember, he won the job back in 14, too, and then lost it again and then got it back. So is Kirk Cousins what he's being paid as this year, which is a franchise quarterback?
Yeah, that's what we're about to find out. That's why general manager Scott McLuhan went with the franchise tag route, making him prove it for an entire season. Because if you look at Kirk Cousins, he was magic down the stretch, but he didn't beat a winning team with a winning record, and he put it together in maybe, you know, a several month span only. And you're right, he's been in the league for years. He's had problems with interceptions at times. He looks like he fits Jigerton's system really well, but they want him to do it for another year before they're going to just throw one of these ridiculous quarterback contracts. And, you know, this is going to be the time now that they've invested around him, especially with Josh Dotson in the first round trading up to get him, or trading down and taking him. This is when they're going to find out if he's a franchise quarterback.
The Cowboys returned Tony Romo, of course, coming off a pair of offseason collarbone injuries, and now at the age of 36. So he's healthy for now. Dez Bryant is healthy for now. And, of course, that running game should again be healthy with the emergence, the entrance, I should say, of number 4 overall pick Ezekiel Elliott. And we'll have to wait and see if this offense is able to regain its luster. We move now to the NFC South, where there is an interesting blend of young and old at quarterback, and we start with Hub's take on this division.
There's no question about what's happening at these positions in the NFC South. Do I think that Jameis Winston is going to be a franchise quarterback? There's no argument that Drew Brees is. Matt Ryan has shown enough to prove that he can be. And Cam Newton, you know, I mean, he may be the best in the league right now. Jameis Winston, who do you compare him to? You know, people immediately, because of ethnicity, because of size, because of traits, compare him to Cam Newton. Not true. Jameis Winston is not a great athlete. He's not a running quarterback. He'll get a little mobile if you want to, but he is a big, strong guy with a rocket for an arm who's got some touch, who seems to be pretty smart and understand the offense, and I think has a chance to be a really good quarterback. Now, you know, Kevin, I look at that ball club. You don't worry about depth when you've got a youngster who's the quarterback of the future. Clearly, Dirk Koetter got his job because of what he did with Winston last year, but what is the next step for Winston this year that we think he can achieve, and are they okay behind him if he gets banged up?
You know, with a lot of quarterbacks, it's young quarterbacks, it's about fixing your accuracy, making sure you're more accurate like Winston needs to be, and then of course, as we talked about with Blake Bortles earlier in the show, cutting down on the interceptions. And if you're Jameis Winston, you got Mike Evans, you got Vincent Jackson, you got Austin Seferian-Jenkins, I think an underrated tight end, Doug Martin, a couple rookies that often, or now second-year players that played pretty well on that offensive line. They got a nice setup for him, and I thought he played lot better last year than I expected. They have an interesting thing behind him in Mike Glennon. Talk about a guy who's been a rumored trade piece for a long time, and now he's kind of almost approaching Brock Osweiler territory when you look at his contract. I mean, what if Mike Glennon gets a chance for a couple games, plays well, and then could, you know, get a lot of money? That's the way the quarterbacks are. We saw it this past year. But he's stayed in Tampa all these years. He's had some starting experience. He's a very strong arm, but he's obviously not Winston. He's obviously not this regime's quarterback. He's going to go somewhere soon. But for now, it's a pretty nice backup situation.
Let's bounce to the New Orleans Saints. Drew Brees is going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. There's no question about that. His numbers seem to still be fairly consistent. I did a couple of his games from the sidelines for Westwood One last year. He has lost something. He has lost something in his quickness back in the pocket. He's lost a little bit of arm strength. He still unloads the football quicker than anybody in the NFL, A, which is why his completion percentage is so high, and B, why his offensive line often looks better than it is.
Yeah, and they've done work in the past couple of years to continue to fix that offensive line. Mark Ingram had a good year last year, and then in the draft, they get Michael Thomas, a kid out of Ohio State, and he's going to be a nice compliment to Brandon Cooks. And then Kobe Fleener, I thought one of the better free agent signings this period, getting him in for Drew Brees. Obviously, they didn't have Jimmy Graham anymore, and I think Fleener's going to be a nice weapon for him. So I think Brees certainly has got better options this year than he had last year. But you're right, the age thing, is that going to come back and get him this year? And there's not, I mean, behind him, you got Luke McCown, and there's Garrett Grayson, who I'm really curious about, maybe watching in the preseason. Is he going to be the eventual guy in a few years to be after Drew Brees, or are they going to keep going for other quarterbacks?
You know, you look at last year's quarterback draft, Nate, when it was clearly about Winston and Mariota. Garrett Grayson was the kid I liked the best of the next group, the developmental group, and the Saints surprised a lot of people going up and getting him. I think it was the second round, or second or third, when he was perceived to be more of a middle-round pick. They see him as the future, or at least they hope to develop him into that. Obviously, it's not Luke McCown.
Yeah, I mean, Luke McCown's getting up there a little bit in age, too. He looks like a great backup, but he's not the future to Drew Brees. And if they do think Garrett Grayson has these skills to develop, and clearly they do going up to get him, what a great situation to have him learn behind Drew Brees with Sean Payton in that system, a system that Sean Payton's surely going to want to keep going if he's still there and Drew Brees isn't.
Kevin, Matt Ryan was there. I mean, you know, we're talking about a Pro Bowl quarterback who seems to have gone steadily backwards over the last year and a half. Now, again, the offensive line has been iffy at best. They've had injuries at running back. They had injuries at wide receiver. On the other hand, he's got the best wide receiver in football in Julio Jones. Devontae Freeman put up numbers last year. What happened to Matt Ryan?
Yeah, this team is so average when you look at the talent outside Julio Jones, and you wonder how much that impacted Matt Ryan. But look, the greatest quarterbacks in the game elevate the talent around them, and that's what he needs to do. They bring in Mohamed Sanu to replace Roddy White. I think that's a downgrade, certainly when Roddy White was in his prime. And then, you know, Austin Hooper's the tight end, the rookie, and him with Jacob Tammy, that could be an interesting duo, but they're very thin at wide receiver. They don't have a ton behind Sanu and Julio Jones. And we're going to learn a lot more this year about whether last year was a blip on the radar for Matt Ryan. Maybe it's just he needs another year under that offense with Kyle Shanahan. Sometimes it takes time with Shanahan's offense to really get acclimated to it.
And Arthur, that's where I was going to go. Kevin just went. It was interesting because Matt Ryan talked after the season about admitting he struggled early in Kyle Shanahan's offense. It can take a while to get anybody's offense, but actually Kyle Shanahan's offense is about as quarterback friendly as they get because he relies as much on the running game. There's not a lot of trickery to it. It's pretty much a pure West Coast scheme. And so that surprised me a little bit when Ryan, after, what, 5-6 years in the league as a Pro Bowler, said I struggled with his offense.
It's quarterback friendly, but I think you'll also hear passers say that it takes a little while to grasp. I think it was more that. He said he was overwhelmed at times, and certainly they've improved his comfort. While you lose Roddy White, obviously you get in Alex Mack, the best center in football, so that's going to help the whole offensive line improve. It should help Matt Ryan. And as their backup, they got Matt Schaub, who went to his only Pro Bowl under Kyle Shanahan in year two of that offense.
It's been a long time since the reigning NFL MVP will enter the following season with as much scrutiny as the NFC champion Carolina Panthers as Cam Newton. Well, he kind of made that bet at the way the Super Bowl wrapped up, and it kind of made us at least temporarily forget about his transcendent 2015. It will be fascinating to see how he's able to follow up that the sour ending of the Super Bowl. We're halfway through the NFC quarterback breakdown, moving now to the West and the situation in San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick. Hub is going to open up our roundtable discussion talking about the embattled Kaepernick.
You look at just last season with Kaepernick, and we now know, he had three surgeries, so he obviously was banged up. But you just go back 3 weeks before Gabbert was given the starting job, they played the Baltimore Ravens. Kaepernick had a 128.2 passer rating, threw for 340 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. The week before that, they lost to the Giants 30-27. He was 107.1 with 262 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. You can go back to basically even week two with the Pittsburgh against the better teams. He was 106.7 in that one, threw for 335 yards, rushed for 51 yards. There were flashes of Colin Kaepernick as Colin Kaepernick last season, and now we know how banged up he was. Now, obviously, we have found out more about him off the field, guys, and that appears to be the bigger issue, as near as I can tell, Nate, in that he doesn't relate to teammates very well. He is known to be somewhat of a loner. Apparently, he hasn't shown great leadership in the huddle, and yet this guy is right there with Cam Newton as far as a quarterback prospect who can do it all, and at this stage of their careers may be a better passer than Cam Newton.
Yeah, and you have these worries about the leadership and the locker room aspect with quarterbacks, and it really freaks you out, and you wonder if that played into it or if it was just a guy like Jim Tomsula who comes in as immediately on the hot seat. His team's not doing well. He makes a rash switch to Blaine Gabbert, and he's able to just say, I can't win with this guy. He's a problem in our locker room, and tries to blame him to save his job. You have to wonder about that, but it's interesting because to make a switch to Blaine Gabbert, and you talk about a guy who has a ceiling, a very set ceiling with his inability to handle pressures and work on third downs. It was interesting to see them move away from him, and it's even more curious that it's taken this long to figure out, you know, Chip Kelly and Colin Kaepernick, perfect skill sets, could be a perfect marriage. You don't know how the locker room is going to work out, but you're excited to see how it might work on the field.
Yeah, and that Gabbert analysis comes from a Mizzou alum. So, you know, guys, bottom line is that the ceiling here is all about Kaepernick, assuming he's a 49er when Kelly gets to camp. I would not write off more great things from him. Certainly Thad Lewis, who they brought in, Jeff Driscoll, the rookie they drafted this year, they're not going to be the difference. Now, the St. Louis situation, you know, Kevin, I touched on this when we were talking about the NFC East. And the reality is that, you know, I don't think they should have made the trade. I think they took the wrong guy. They've got Jared Goff. Case Keenum apparently is ahead of Nick Foles on the depth chart. Sean Mannion is still there as well. But obviously their situation is all about Jared Goff.
Yeah, and I guess when you look at where the Rams are, you know, it's I guess where you should be in that situation. They've moved to L.A. They wanted a quarterback of the future. They go up to get the number one pick, and that's their guy. That's what they chose. And look, it's not like Goff is really any worse than what they had based on what we saw last season. At least you can look to see what he can do in the future, but it doesn't mean you give up all those draft picks in the present and the future to move forward. I'm curious to see what happens with Nick Foles. You got to imagine he's not going to be in a Rams uniform by September. You know, is there a team in which somebody gets hurt and they'll go ahead and make a trade for him, or what? Or are the Rams going to try to get maybe a draft pick back for him? I can't imagine you're going to get much for Nick Foles the way he played last year. But you know, it's the Goff show now, and at least he's got some guys behind him who have some experience.
Yeah, I'm going to assume most of you know that the Rams will be in Los Angeles and not St. Louis, but don't fault me for it, guys. I still put the Cardinals in St. Louis on occasion. So we got to get them in the right city. And Arthur, you know, Jeff Fisher has said that Goff is not necessarily his opening day starter. As a matter of fact, as of now, he's not. Can you really start Case Keenum when you just did what you did to bring in Jared Goff?
I don't think so, because they said the biggest, you know, they didn't say this. We all assume that the biggest deciding factor between Goff and Wentz was Goff's pro readiness. So it would be a bit counterintuitive to then roll out Case Keenum, who's, you know, a journeyman career backup. But you never know. People want to say that the defense is ready to win now, and the fact is they lost half their secondary and a leader in the second level, so they've got a lot of work to do elsewhere and really no receiving core. So it's not like there aren't other holes on this team as well.
One of the burning questions in the NFC West, can Carson Palmer get the playoff monkey off his back? It was a dreadful conclusion for the Cardinals' season in Carolina with 6 turnovers by Palmer. That's kind of been the knock on him. He was an MVP caliber performer during the regular season, but is chasing that elusive second postseason victory. All the pieces are in place, both sides of the ball. Frankly, Arizona has been very aggressive, and there is a ton of talent on Carson Palmer's offense. It's up to him to take the next step. With Seattle, Russell Wilson has already done as much, but a lot of pieces have left, whether it's offensive line, Marshawn Lynch, a lot of moving parts for the Seahawks. And Hub and Nate are here to discuss what's the depth like behind Russell Wilson in the event that something happens with that offensive line.
Russell Wilson is considered, you got to get Nate Atkins' article in the NFL Preview Magazine coming out in mid-June. It'll be on your newsstands at profootballweekly.com. We've done some extensive research on this. Russell Wilson is one of those three or four guys, along with Cam Newton, Andrew Luck. We don't know yet about Winston Mariota, the younger guys who are the heirs apparent. And yet behind them, they have not re-signed Tavares Jackson. You've got Pete Carroll raving about Trevone Boykin out of TCU, saying he sees a lot of Russell Wilson in him. We're not sure where he's seen that yet, since he hasn't put pads on or been on an NFL field. And then they sign another rookie in Jake Heaps out of Miami. Those are the other two throwers they're going to camp with, unless they still bring back Tavares Jackson, Nate. So, yeah, you're in great shape with Russell Wilson, but you can't go to the season with these two guys behind him and nothing else, can you?
No, I mean, you wouldn't think so, with the fact that Russell Wilson, he's not the biggest quarterback. He has a history of taking a lot of hits. And now you see Russell Okung out of town. You see J.R. Sweezy out of town. And they brought in Jermaine Ifedi in the first round. But is the rookie going to solve your pass protection issues? The good thing for Russell Wilson is he got hit so badly early last year that it really enhanced his trigger. And he starts getting the ball out a lot faster than he ever did before. And especially when Jimmy Graham went down, he didn't have one player to lock into. He just had to drop back and sort of make quick reads. And that really, talking to some people, that's really what played into his crazy stretch down the home stretch, where he threw 25 touchdowns to two picks. And so they're going to have to hope that he keeps getting the ball out quickly, because behind that line, he could get hit, and there's not much depth behind him.
You know, Kevin, Nate makes a great point about that offensive line, and one of the reasons it's as weak as it is because they traded Max Unger, a Pro Bowl center, to get Jimmy Graham, along with, they did get an extra pick as well. That line is still shaky as can be, and how do we explain, beyond just the simple explanation of it forced him to move quicker, that the offense could be that much better without Jimmy Graham than it is when you look at the Seattle receivers?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think part of it's a testament to Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse and the way they've elevated their games. Tyler Lockett, I know it's Arthur's breakout player projection for this year, is Lockett, and seeing what he can do as a receiver. We've already seen what he can do as a returner. And then if Thomas Rawls can be as good as he was in a couple of games stretch there for Seattle at running back, Russell Wilson's got more options. So, you know, does Jimmy Graham have a better grasp of the offense? Do he and Russell Wilson have a better rapport on the field this year than they had last year? It's going to come down to that, because you're right, they were able to go pretty far without Graham.
And now to wrap things up in the NFC, we move to the North, where Matt Stafford has a lot of continuity in terms of his coaching staff, his schemes, but he's lost his lifeline. We will for the first time see what's life like without Calvin Johnson.
You know, it will, of course, be interesting to see. You don't lose a Hall of Fame receiver and not have the offense take a step back. But at the end of the day, and again, I've done a lot of their games, Matt Stafford helped Calvin Johnson look good as much as Calvin Johnson helped Matt Stafford look good. Yes, nobody was better at contested balls and double and triple coverage. He occasionally went up to get them. But Stafford's pretty good about putting the ball out there, about putting it where it needs to be. He's got all the tools. Now, he's been a little streaky in his career, Arthur. But at the end of the day, it seems like the only thing that has held Matt Stafford back has been kind of the whole Detroit offense, whole Detroit game plan, lack of a running game, and occasionally getting a little wild with the football. His mechanics aren't always great, but Stafford is a guy who I think is going to be okay without Megatron if they put the right pieces around him.
Yeah, streaky is the right word, but I'll tell you, it was streaky in the best sort of way to end last season. He had the best 8-game stretch of his career to lead the Lions to a 6-2 finish, save Jim Caldwell's job. Jim Bob Cooter being promoted, of course, when Joe Lombardi was fired as offensive coordinator, was a big part of that. Caldwell repeatedly mentioned kind of the synergy he had with Stafford. It was a simplified offense, and you really saw the best from Stafford. Now, you also mentioned the erratic mechanics. That can definitely get him into trouble, as can decision-making. He sometimes puts the ball in harm's way, but we'll see. The offense is dependent on Eric Ebron taking a huge step, Amir Abdullah taking a huge step, those guys in years 3 and 2, and then Marvin Jones. He's not going to be the number one receiver he was paid to be at $20 million guaranteed, but he better be a really dynamite number two that's going to pair with Golden Tate to kind of replace that production.
And Stafford has been very healthy, very durable. I think, is Dan Orlovsky still
tough
there?
Guy. Yeah, Orlovsky, and they drafted Jake Rudock. Get right back to the Michigan folks.
Yeah, well, I don't know that Jake Rudock's going to be an NFL quarterback, but at least in Orlovsky, you've got a guy who has started, who has won games, the Jim Caldwell connection there.
Right.
And it's important to amplify what Arthur just said about Jim Bob Cooter. Much like we talked about with Andrew Luck, struggled with with Pep Hamilton. We think we'll be better with Chudzinski. Once Jim Bob Cooter took over, Matt Stafford took off. Kevin, you spend a lot of time around the Chicago Bears. There is no question that Jay Cutler is the starter. He's coming off arguably his best season. He's lost his coordinator in Adam Gase. He does have his quarterback coach, Dowell Loggins, now coordinating that offense. They are as good at number two as anybody in the league in Brian Hoyer. It's hard to believe, but quarterback appears to be one of the strengths of this Bears football team.
Yeah, it certainly does. You know, I think everyone expected the Bears to draft a quarterback, and when they didn't, and then right after the draft signed Brian Hoyer, everyone's like, oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense, because give Hoyer $2 million, you have, the, as you said, one of, if not the best backup quarterback in the league. Look what he did last year before he got hurt. So that's a good situation. Cutler played well. Let's see what he does now in Dowell Loggins' offense, someone he's close with. But look, he did well last year without Alshon Jeffrey for seven games, without Kevin White at all, without Eddie Royal for a bunch of games. Now he gets all three of them back. He misses Martellus Bennett and Matt Forte, but it's a big year. Well, we always say it's a big year for Cutler, but you know, he's got all the weapons now, so I'm curious to see what he's like. But yeah, you said Hoyer and then David Fales behind him, who the Bears still like. It's a good situation.
Yeah, David Fales, I can never remember if it's San Diego State, San Jose State, one of those California schools. Fifth round pick a couple of years ago from the former regime. Both the Patriots and the Ravens tried to sign him off the Bears practice squad. So when you've got Ozzie Newsome and Bill Belichick looking at quarterbacks, they may even be good at three. Whether they can keep him or not this year remains to be seen. We take a look now, Arthur, at the situation in Green Bay. We don't really need to talk that much about this. I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to be fine. You look at what happened last year. It's not like he had an awful year, but that was really all about the Jordy Nelson injury, the way the offensive line got banged up. They've made a couple changes as far as how they back him up. Scott Tolzien has moved on now, but at the end of the day, everybody would love to have the Packers quarterback situation.
Yeah, no doubt about it. A bad year for Aaron Rodgers. Actually, he's the worst of his career since the first as a starter. I'm sorry. It was 31 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Still made a lot of special plays, but he also made a lot of really uncharacteristic ones. Accuracy is what's made Aaron Rodgers the stuff of legend, and he was really inaccurate last year, and he was really not as poised in the pocket either. But I think that, as you mentioned, is the byproduct of not trusting any of your receivers and your offensive line just going down one member after the next each week.
Guys, I'm not going to pull any punches. I'm not a Teddy Bridgewater guy. I think he may be okay. He may be a pretty good game manager. I just don't see the NFL arm. Now, in fairness to him, he has not had the weapons. Hopefully, the emergence of Stephon Diggs last year and now the drafting of Laquon Treadwell will help him. But, Nate, this is a kid who still has a lot to prove, and Adrian Peterson ain't going to be around forever.
Yeah, he does. And he took a few strides last year, but not as many as you were expecting. Like you said, they're still looking for that guy out wide to throw to. I mean, Stephon Diggs is a nice little target, but getting Laquon Treadwell, the guy that everyone, that a lot of people think was the best receiver in the draft, a real possession guy who can go up and fight for the ball, it's going to help him out, because Teddy has a nice arm. It's not the greatest arm in the world, but what he really has to develop is sort of his accuracy on sort of throws in the middle of the field, in intermediate parts of the field. And, you know, North Turner's done some great work with quarterbacks over the years, but he's got to take that step if the Minnesota Vikings want to be real contenders.
Vikings pretty solid behind him. You've got Sean Hill, who's been around the league a long time. We forgot to mention with the Packers, you got Brett Hundley, who I loved out of UCLA last year. He's emerged as the number two there now. So the NFC North, you know, it's funny because it's usually been a quarterback black hole in prior decades, but right now, they're looking pretty solid at quarterback.
Well, there you have it. 32 teams, 32 quarterback rooms, and some interesting questions for sure as we sit here in May. That's going to do it for this week's show, but please check us out each week on Blog Talk Radio and subscribe to us on iTunes. As we said, we'd love it if you also follow us on Twitter. I am at Arthur Arkish, at @Hub_Arkish, at Kevin Fishbane, and at Nate Atkins CF. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you listening, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week. Hope you have a good one. Thanks.
Hi, everyone. This is Hub Arkish, executive editor of Pro Football Weekly, and I'm here to let you know that Pro Football Weekly is back. To celebrate, we're giving away a collector's edition hoodie a day for the next 60 days. Just go to profootballweekly.com/hoodie, enter your email, and if you've won, we'll email you right back. While you're there, check out the site. You want an insider's guide to the NFL? Go to ProFootballWeekly.com for all the news and analysis you won't find anywhere else. Pro Football Weekly, the best coverage in the NFL since 1967.